I'm opening up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Public Safety. Today is March 1st, 2017. It's public hearing and public testimony on House Bill 5532, the Oregon Military. And I've got a wonderful, wonderful list of individuals, and I'm going to call you up two at a time so that we can hear from all of you. And gosh, I have to put on my glasses so I can see probably first. That probably would be good. Colonel Jennifer Party and Howard Owens.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the subcommittee. I am Colonel Jennifer Party, the Mission Support Group Commander for the 142nd Fighter Wing. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today in support of Senate Bill 5532 and specifically the mission of the 142nd Civil Engineer Squadron located at the Portland Air National Guard Base. Before I begin, I would like to share with you that I am a 25-year resident of the city of Portland, where my husband and I elected to raise our three children, all of whom are high school students in the Portland Public Schools. I've proudly served over 32 years in our nation's military, 24 of those years in the Oregon Air National Guard. The 142nd Fighter Wing Civil Engineer Squadron is a key supporting element.
Excuse me for just a second. You can move away from the mic. It's pretty good. Yeah, there you go.
Got it. Sorry. The 142nd Fighter Wing's Civil Engineer Squadron is a key supporting element of to the 142nd Fighter Wing's Aerospace Control Alert, or ACA, mission. The ACA mission provides national security to the Pacific Northwest with its F-15 fighter jets and crews, ready and on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The Civil Engineer Squadron is predominantly a traditional part-time military organization with a very limited full-time staff, federal full-time staff. The primary function of the eight-person federal staff is to organize, train, and provide support to the part-time military members. The majority of the full-time staff is comprised of state employees. The National Guard Bureau's model for an installation the size of Portland Air National Guard Base requires and authorizes 29 maintenance personnel. We are currently authorized by the state to hire only 20 of our 29 federally authorized positions, or 60%. The primary mission of the state workforce is to provide critical facility and grounds maintenance and repair to 64 buildings, culminating in over 740 square feet and approximately 220 acres. Many of these aging buildings house aircraft assets valued at over $50 million each, contain climate-sensitive support and repair equipment, and critical communications infrastructure necessary to support the 24-hour alert mission. Some of our most critical facilities are the crew living quarters that house the alert crew and the three aircraft always on status, poised and ready to respond when our nation calls. To give you an idea of the importance of the contribution of our state maintenance staff, during the recent bouts of inclement weather experienced across the city, the state maintenance staff was responsible for working around the clock to operate snow and ice removal equipment to keep the military ramps and taxiways clear. Excuse me. While the Port of Portland maintains the runways as part of our airport joint use agreement, it is the sole responsibility of the Civil Engineer Squadron full-time state maintenance staff to keep the ramps clear and passable, particularly from ice. Jets are unable to taxi over ice due to the risk of ingesting a piece into the engine, causing upwards of $2 million in damage, potentially rendering the aircraft completely unflyable in a time of emergency. In addition to the aircraft ramp areas, the state workforce must also clear and maintain all of the base roadways to allow for safe travel of employees to and from their work centers, as well as for safe passage of security patrols and emergency response vehicles. Another example of the critical role of our state workforce was demonstrated during a recent power outage that occurred after normal duty hours. In our most critical 24-hour operations building, we rely on redundant backup generator power to maintain continuous operations during a loss of primary power. When the civilian utility company restored power in the area during this recent event, a surge was sent back through our system, causing over $50,000 in damage to the backup generator, rendering it unserviceable, destroying a number of circuits in the command center building, as well as in climate-controlled rooms housing critical information systems. As a result, two electricians from our state workforce were recalled to triage the damage, ensure workplace safety, and to perform immediate repairs to the most critical areas in the building. On-demand response to emergency situations is merely one aspect of the state workforce's responsibilities. Of equal importance is their responsibility to perform periodic preventative maintenance tasks. These tasks range from working critical fire suppression, fire detection, structural, HVAC, and electrical systems to the more day-to-day routine tasks. Due to critically low manning levels, we are currently operating with, we have been forced to continually defer periodic preventative maintenance, resulting in a backlog of over 1,900 maintenance work orders. As a result, the fire suppression system in the wing's primary maintenance aircraft maintenance hangar, which houses up to 6 aircraft at any given time, again, worth over $50 million each, and over 400 maintenance personnel who work in that facility.
Pardon me, do you have written, is that all in your testimony?
Yes, ma'am.
You'll be able to give your written testimony to staff. We'll make that available to all of us, and so that I can make certain that I hear everyone, and I'll say that to all in the audience. If you have written testimony, it would be good if you would give that to staff so that we can share it with the members of this panel. I want to be able to hear everyone. Thank you. Go ahead, finish.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry, me finish?
Yes. But make it brief, because I need to get the others to testify too.
Co-chair Winters, co-chair Starr.
Oh, excuse me. She can finish. She can wrap up, please.
All right, slow down now.
Okay.
We can start again.
In the early morning hours of a Saturday this past January, an intruder was able to scale the perimeter fence in a dark corner of the base and gain unauthorized access to a sensitive area of our 24-hour command post building. This incident not only put our personnel on shift in danger, but it allowed an unauthorized individual into a place where, had they taken another 20 steps out the door, they would have been out on a flight line with our F-15 fleet. This intrusion was possible because of an unserviced personnel door that unknowingly had locked in the open position, allowing the intruder to gain access. So just like the 173rd Fighter Wing at Klamath Falls, the 142nd enjoys a strong state and federal partnership. The National Guard Bureau supports the nation's Air National Guard Civil Engineer Squadron full-time facility.
I'm going to have to stop.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Because in order to get everybody, I didn't want to limit everybody to 2 to 3 minutes. So I would ask you to wrap it up and then give your written testimony to staff. But if you please wrap it up so that we can be able to hear everyone.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Beginning in October of 17, the fighter wing is required to absorb a new must-pay stormwater utility bill, which ranges at about $50,600 a month. So due to the lack of ability of state resources, they don't exist to cover the $220,000 of the non-federal share of this bill. This will require us to eliminate 8 positions and leaving us without critical trade skills to perform the work that is necessary. So just to conclude, I've shared a few recent examples of things that have happened in the 142nd Fighter Wing to illustrate the near catastrophic funding issues and what they have culminated in. When these conditions occur in the future without, in the continued situation, the conditions could result potentially in the shutdown of the ACA mission. So I would like to say thank you very much for your support that you provide to the Oregon Military Department, to the Oregon Air National Guard, and to the 142nd Fighter Wing. It's an honor to address you today, and I offer my personal thanks to you, and I'm sorry that I took too long.
Okay, sir.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, distinguished members of the subcommittee. I'm Deputy Fire Chief Howard Owens. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 5532, specifically the mission of the 173rd Fire Department stationed at Kingsley Field Air National Guard Base in Klamath Falls. Before I begin, I want to share with you that I'm a lifelong Oregon resident, born and raised in Klamath Falls. I'm also a retired Air Force Master Sergeant. I worked previously as a battalion chief for the city of Coos Bay. When an opportunity was available to return to my hometown of Klamath Falls as a state of Oregon employee and part of the 173rd Fighter Wing, I was thrilled. The 173rd Fighter Wing Fire and Emergency Services is comprised of 30 state employees and one federal employee, all fire protection specialists. Our primary mission is to provide aircraft rescue firefighting, also known as ARF, at Kingsley Field in support of training student fighter pilots for air-to-air combat. The Air Force and Air National Guard ARF mission requires a combination of on-duty firefighters and water requirement to be available during military aircraft line operations. We also provide 24-hour emergency services to facility and personnel at the 173rd Fighter Wing. To give you a feel for the scope of our capability, during calendar year 2016, we accumulated 210 emergency responses. 52 of these responses were specific to our F-15. By upholding our mission to ensure safety of others and including firefighting, providing services to Crater Lake, Klamath Falls Regional Airport, as well as assisting civilian fire departments in Klamath Falls and the surrounding community. Through an airport joint use agreement, also known as an AJUA, our 173rd Fire and Emergency Services is responsible for providing emergency response to commercial air carriers and tenant aviation services like FedEx and UPS. In fact, four of last year's emergency responses for large-scale civilian aircraft experiencing medical or mechanical related emergencies. One of them, an Alaskan Airlines Flight 737, involving a passenger having an emergent cardiac problem. The aircraft landed safely, and the 173rd Fire Department was able to provide advanced life support medical care until the patient could be transported to local Sky Lakes Medical Center for further treatment. Given the rural nature of Klamath Falls and Klamath Basin area, strong ties have developed that establish mutual aid agreements and public-private partnerships with the city and county agencies. In 2016, the 173rd Fire Department provided 113 mutual aid responses to support emergencies in our community. Fire District 1 is the primary provider for fire and medical emergency services in Klamath Falls and the surrounding area. But based on call volume and sometimes simultaneously occurring incidents, Kingsley firefighters have been called to respond. Last year, we responded to 7 residential structure fires. On 5 of those responses, Kingsley provided initial engine company operations, started incident command, and initial fire attack. The remaining 106 responses in 2016 for medical emergencies, vehicle accidents, miscellaneous fires involving vegetation, vehicles, and refuse dumpsters. The 173rd Fire Department is also a key partner in the county providing support to governor-declared conflagrations to large-scale wildfires in Oregon. Over the last 2 summers, Kingsley Fire sent engine crews and urban interface structure protection during conflagrations at Crater Lake and Lapine. Our department takes great pride in supporting our community. The 173rd Fighter Wing Fire Department was key in partnering with Klamath Community College and the start of a public safety training center. Our shared goal now provides students with a passion or interest in fire, structure, wildland, emergency, or medical services, an opportunity to acquire training in their hometown. The fire department, with support of the wing, has participated or partnered on many heart-touching projects locally or within Southern Oregon. For example, our department spearheads the annual Polar Plunge, raising money for Special Olympics. We're also proud to be the leader in the county for Pink T-Shirt October, where we donate all fundraising proceeds to Sky Lakes Oncology Center for breast cancer screening and treatment items. When the 173rd Fighter Wing holds the Air National Guard's largest combat fighter exercise every 2 years in Southern Oregon, known as Century Eagle, the community and over 7,000 visitors are thrilled to see a diversity of these type of aircraft fly in hometown Klamath Falls. However, it's Kingsley Fire Department who provides expertise for incident action planning, supports the needs in the event, including medical, mass casualty, hazardous materials, and fire response preparedness. Even in the toughest times...
I'm going to ask you to wrap it up, please.
Yes, ma'am. Even in the toughest times, Kingsley Fire State employees are ready to act. During the tragic events of the Umpqua Community College shootings, the 173rd Fire Department was a valuable resource for emergency and response coalition. Members of our team work local incident management to provide meals and critical incident counseling. As I conclude, I want to speak on one final partnership that rounds out the 173rd Fire Department success story, the partnership between state and federal entities. The National Guard Bureau supports the nation's Air National Guard Wing Fire Department through longstanding agreements. The fire program at the Kingsley Field is primarily 100% reimbursed through federal dollars provided to the National Guard Bureau. However, historically, there are certain costs which require state investment, such as pay for select certifications, costs associated with Oregon Department of Justice, and others. The state of Oregon, through the Oregon Military Department, have covered costs and passed by items and deserve great thanks. The support you provide for the Oregon Military Department, the Oregon Air National Guard, and the 173rd Fighter Wing, and the surrounding community will always be greatly appreciated. Lastly, I offer my personal thanks to the members of this committee for the opportunity to address you today. And I apologize for being lengthy as well.
Well, the problem is that we only have this room for a certain amount of time. And if I don't allow you all to speak, then you'll say Senator Winters really did not give me the opportunity to put my message on record. So with that, thank you. And I now call up my colleague and friend, Pat Farr. And I believe it's Cora. Let me put my glasses back on so I can see. Kara Sloman with the American Red Cross.
Co-chairs, members of the subcommittee, my name is Pat Farr. I'm chair of the Lane County Board of Commissioners, and I'm also here representing Association of Oregon Counties. Co-chairs, I've been told to keep this as close to 20 minutes as I can. Pretty hard.
You are not allowed, I am sitting next to you, you are not allowed to give the chair a heart attack, because then I would be the one who has to maintain life support until EMS arrives.
Then I'll hold.
Been there, done that, not doing it again.
If I hit the 4-minute mark, pull the plug, please. I have had the honor to serve as a colleague to you here in the legislature as a House District 14 representative, as did my wife, and I also served in the Oregon Army National Guard. I served in the National Guard starting with the 1249th Engineers. I received my commission in 1979 and transferred to the 2nd of the 162 Infantry, where I served in Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Headquarters Companies. I commanded Charlie Company for a while. AOC is extremely proud of the work of the Military Department and its support for all Oregon counties. We would like to thank General Stencil, Colonel Stuckey, and Director Phelps for their continued leadership to support Oregon counties. Lane County was hit hard in December with a series of ice storms causing damage throughout the county. Now, our county is about the size of Connecticut, so it goes all the way from Haseda Head to the top of the Three Sisters, a lot of miles of the county road. In close cooperation with the Office of Emergency Management, we were able to work thoroughly and successfully through the process of an emergency declaration. We also enjoy a strong partnership between OEM's 9/11 staff and our local 9/11 center. These partnerships and relationships are critical at all times, especially when disasters hit. At AOC, we formed the Sister City-County Program, which pairs up counties to assist each other and work with OEM for disaster response and recovery efforts. So far, approximately 8 counties have joined in this effort, and we appreciate OEM's assistance in the process. We strongly urge the legislature to fund the department at a level necessary to continue all of these successful initiatives. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and again, we thank the department and its leadership for their continued assistance and support.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, and members of the committee. My name is Kara Sloman. I'm the Regional Disaster Officer for the American Red Cross Cascades Region. We have the pleasure of working with the Oregon Military Department and the Office of Emergency Management and Disaster Preparedness, Response, and Recovery Activities across the state of Oregon, and appreciate the opportunity today to speak in support of the Office of Emergency Management. Your local Red Cross responds to disasters each and every day across the state of Oregon. While we most commonly respond to house fires and apartment fires, each year we respond to events such as wildfires, winter storms, and flooding that may impact entire communities. We work with communities to prepare for disasters of all kinds across Oregon, including building our readiness for events such as a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. As we're all aware, Cascadia subduction zone earthquake will require an unprecedented response and create an immediate need for life-sustaining mass care and mass displacement services that will take the entire community to respond to. The Red Cross is a key support agency for Emergency Support Function 6 and works with our government and community partners to support mass care planning efforts. Currently, to help support the need for public education about the Cascadia subduction zone, the Red Cross offers a wide range of preparedness education programs, including a special event called Prepare Out Loud. Since last spring, more than 5,000 people across Oregon have attended a Prepare Out Loud event and learned about the Cascadia subduction zone, as well as tangible actions they can take to get themselves and their families ready for not only a Cascadia earthquake, but all disasters of all kinds. A key component of this program is encouraging people to talk with their friends and family to really prepare out loud and talk about preparedness actions and what it means to them. We've been honored to have the Office of Emergency Management as a partner in publicizing and promoting the program, as well as participating in many of these events. Each fall, we also work with the Office of Emergency Management to promote the Great Shakeout to encourage Oregonians to participate in an earthquake drill and be ready for whatever may happen. And we appreciate the opportunity to work together in delivering and supporting preparedness programs across Oregon. We work side by side with the Office of Emergency Management Response and Recovery Activities when disasters occur in Oregon. Red Cross representatives actively participate in the Oregon Emergency Response Council, the Oregon Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission, and Red Cross representatives deploy to the State Emergency Operations Center when it is activated. The Red Cross plays a key role in the delivery of mass care services during times of disaster across Oregon and opens shelters multiple times each year when Oregonians are displaced from their homes due to disasters such as wildfires, floods, and other severe weather. The Red Cross appreciates the opportunity to provide the information today and to be here in support of Oregon's Office of Emergency Management. The resources you allocate towards disaster preparedness, response, and recovery activities are greatly appreciated and much needed, and I appreciate your support each and every day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we ask them a couple questions just so that...
Just quickly, so I can
cut
through.
Them off, too.
I'll try to keep it long.
Which one would you like to ask the question?
I promise I was just teasing.
Oh, well.
We'll move on.
Representative Pat, you didn't have all this trouble when you were here, did you? Never mind, don't answer that.
I had the pleasure.
Ed Flick and Tiffany Brown.
Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, I'm Lieutenant Colonel retired Ed Flick, here representing the Oregon Emergency Management Agency, where I'm the Vice President. I also serve as the County Emergency Manager in Marion County, Oregon. Following my retirement from active duty almost 3 years ago, I came home to Oregon, and I was really excited to do so, but I learned about the significant challenge that our states face with the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. This is truly a wicked challenge that it will require the whole of government and the whole of community to respond to. I'm here to offer my great thanks to the Oregon Military Department and the Oregon Office of Emergency Management for the leadership that the department and agency have shown in guiding our state forward to prepare for this unprecedented challenge. I feel that in a very complex budget year, any investment in emergency management at the state level is greatly appreciated, and encourage the committee to consider the maximum amount of support necessary to that agency. It's often said that emergencies are local, and that is absolutely true, but I'm sure that my colleague Tiffany would agree that without a really effective emergency management agency at the state to provide the coordination and leadership. The county simply will not have the means to perform the functions necessary to reduce the profound risk that the Cascadia event represents to our communities. I'll end just by saying I really appreciate the opportunity on behalf of our association that represents over 400 emergency management professionals in the state to speak in favor of this bill and ask all consideration possible to be given to OEM's budget. Thank you.
Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, I'm Tiffany Brown, the Director of Emergency Management in Clatsop County. Like EMs across the state, my role affords me a professional relationship with the Oregon Emergency Management and Oregon Military Department that I've come here to talk to you about today. Like many that we've heard from here today, I am a native Oregonian. My husband is as well. We live in Astoria, Oregon. Before coming to emergency management, I worked as a 911 dispatcher, a legal assistant, and I was most recently clerk of the board for our Board of Commissioners. So we're working on our budgets in our local communities right now, and as a discipline within the public safety realm at this time of year, I'm always reminded that the value provided by emergency management is harder for people to see and understand than some of the more tangible tactical issues which face our first responders and more traditional practitioners. In contrast, daily operations for emergency management is more strategic than tactical in nature. And because of that, one of our greatest challenges is proving our value to elected officials, to our citizens, and even some of our own colleagues. To complicate matters, I assert that emergency management is a relatively fledgling field in the world of public safety. And more traditional partners like fire, police, public works, and public health are examples that we think of in more traditional terms, and they're more well-defined. Historically, we've been couched in more operational organizations. We've been called civil defense and police and fire. I bring these things up just to say that we're still in a development phase in many ways, and as an Oregon organization in the state of Oregon. The creation of the Oregon Resilience Officer in the last biennium further illustrates a recognition that emergency management agencies need to be closer to their decision makers so that we're having those contacts and developing those relationships in advance of disasters. Wherever we land as emergency managers, and regardless of the size of our organization, we're charged with essentially the same responsibilities: maintaining emergency plans for large events, providing training, exercise, community meetings, lobbying. So the broader, at the end of the day, communication and coordination, some soft skills end up being more of how we're characterized in terms of daily operations. So the broader challenge ends up being for emergency management that in many ways we're an insurance policy with a daily cost that nobody's dying to pay because we have so many more emergent issues in front of us with public safety. But like an insurance policy, investing in emergency management is going to be a really important piece in terms of maintaining resilience and withstanding the impacts of the Cascadia. So with that in mind, I thought about what could I talk to you about today to sort of illustrate that, and I thought I would just go briefly through a couple of projects we've had and look at them through the lens of the Oregon military and Oregon emergency management. So we're a coastal county. We have a consideration that none of your districts do in terms of the Cascadia, which is a tsunami. And 2 years ago, we put together a project called the You Are Here Sign Project. And we put 90 signs in 120 locations throughout Clatsop County to direct people who were less familiar with the area than the residents who live there how to get to high ground from 90 locations in the inundation zone. So this is for our residents. But, you know, by census standards, we have about 40,000 people. On any given day in the summer, we have hundreds of thousands of people. And those are the people that we are constantly striving to understand how we can prepare them and make them understand the hazards that they face, your constituents, your friends, your family, yourselves, when you come to visit us. So how does Oregon Emergency Management help us? We have a budget for 40,000 people, yet we're tasked with planning for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit our coastline every year. They provided a grant for that project, but it's grant Grant administration is a statutory responsibility of Oregon Emergency Management, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the fiduciary responsibilities. They're clear. There are greater things that happen within those grant administration that are sometimes as, if not more valuable than the financial resources we get. Sometimes they give us ideas to do things that we wouldn't have done otherwise, to start projects that they provided the impetus for, and to finish things. We finished that project on our own, but I dare say we wouldn't have started it without their assistance. We have a unique relationship with the Oregon Military Department. In 2013, we built an emergency operations center that is sited at Camp Rylea. It is a unique military, public, private, or public partnership, and it's just the type of networking and relationships that Oregon Emergency Management supports. We're hearing a lot from FEMA. We're hearing a lot from our federal partners these days about how all of our resources are limited, and we need to focus on less traditional partnerships, private, public partnerships and military-civilian partnerships, and I think Oregon Emergency Management does a lot to promote that sort of progress that we're making throughout Oregon. I was thinking about the military on the way here this morning, and I was thinking of some maxims that we're all familiar with, you know, train like we fight. And those are mottos that we have traditionally associated with our military, our national and our state military, in wartime. But I assert that the Cascadia is a new type of fight that we need to fight. And so, in keeping with the theme of tactical, strategical, hard skills, soft skills, one of the things I think that we glean from working closely with the Oregon military is that we learn how to better emulate that mindset, that train like we fight. And those are the things that I think we're going to need to meet the demands of the Cascadia. State emergency management in every state provides a lifeline to local emergency management offices, resources without which local communities would be greatly challenged to prepare for all hazards, but particularly catastrophic events like the Cascadia. I thank you for the opportunity to speak today to the critically important resources needed by emergency management agencies around the state. Thank you for your support of Oregon Emergency Management and the Oregon Military Department.
Thank you for your testimony. I think we're pretty mindful of the Cascadia and the impending event. Thank you. Ruby Aguilar and Kayla Golden.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, and members of the committee. I am Cadet Aguilar, currently enrolled at OICP for Class 53. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 5532. I'm 70 years old and I'm from Beaverton, Oregon. I applied for Class 51, but unfortunately was not accepted. Not being accepted didn't stop me from reapplying. The motivation I had to succeed and become better was extremely high. I wasn't going to let anything stop me from achieving my goals. So I reapplied, and luckily was accepted for Class 53. I wasn't going to let an opportunity like this go by, especially because I knew that it could change my life. My freshman and sophomore years were definitely a struggle. They were some of my toughest years. I would skip school often, which led to me falling behind in school. When you aren't attending school, you can't really complete any assignments. The posse, or friends, as I'd call them, that I was hanging around were not benefiting me, my future, or supporting me in any way. I was becoming rebellious, ruthless, and selfless. I was disappointing my biggest supporters, my mother and family. I had no chance of graduating with my class because I decided it was more appealing to skip school with my clique than attend my junior year. What kind of example was I going to be for my siblings? My little sister and brother looked up to me every day. Every day I looked at them, I felt guilty. I knew my bad habits had to change. I couldn't keep doing this to them or myself. Now that I've committed myself to the program, I also committed myself to be better and make the change I need to and make the change I needed to make to have a more stable life. With the help of OICP, I can see a huge improvement in myself, my mindset, and the way I view things. Being here for 7 weeks has taught me a lot about myself that I didn't realize when I was back at home. I always underestimated myself, not knowing what I was fully capable of becoming and or doing. When I was home, I never took the time to go on a 30-minute jog or do a couple push-ups, because in reality, not many teenagers decide to exercise. Teenagers my age would rather sit at home and watch some Netflix. I now realize that if I would have decided to go out of my way and actually run or do some sort of physical exercise, I wouldn't have struggled as much in the beginning of the physical portion of the program. Not having a healthy body before coming to OICP affected me a lot. Back home, it got bad to the point where I would get pains in my sides and I couldn't breathe. I would always end up getting sent to the emergency room. That made me realize that I lacked all motivation to have and maintain a healthy lifestyle. That couldn't continue any longer. OICP has already impacted my life in a good way. It all started with discipline, hard work, and motivation. I now can jog without running out of breath. Imagine that. It has become so much easier for me to focus on my academic work and get the help I need without getting pushed aside. This program has built me up. With only being here 7 weeks, it has helped make me mentally, physically, and emotionally stronger than I have ever been. When I complete the program, I will gain my high school diploma. Once I graduate and go back home, I will be 18 and will return to the retail job I was working at before I attended OICP. My plan is to join the Air Force and keep succeeding and striving for greatness. I don't regret accepting the invitation to this program, because without it, I wouldn't be able to say that for once I'm happy with who I am becoming. I'm proud to be part of Class 53. The support you provide to the Oregon Military Department, the Office of Emergency Management, and the Oregon National Guard is greatly appreciated. I would be happy to answer any questions.
I only have one question, Cadet Aguilar. What time do you get up in the morning?
6 a.m., ma'am.
Would you enlighten members of this panel what your day is like?
We wake up early, and we get right to it. Everything is productive every single day. When it gets to schoolwork, we're focused. All the cadets are focused. We don't get distracted at all. And I think that once it gets to PT, physical training, it's really helpful. If you're stressed, it relieves you. And I think it's just a really productive day every single day.
Any questions? Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, and members of the committee. My name is Kayla Golden, and I am a 2004 graduate of the Oregon Youth Challenge Program. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today in support of Senate Bill 5532 and specifically the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program. I, like many people here today, am also a native to Oregon. I was born and raised here. I came to the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program in 2004 for a lot of the same reasons as Cadet Aguilar here and many of the kids who attend this program. I was not making the greatest decisions. I had dropped out of school. I had been out of school 6 months at that point. I also was associated with friends that were not creating a positive direction for my future. And it basically came down to it with my parents is this option or I was going to be in jail and somewhere else. So I applied and I was fortunately accepted my first round. I started residency at the Youth Challenge in July. This program has done an immense amount of help for me.
Today, currently, I am married with three children. We have twins that are a year and a half. My daughter, my stepdaughter, is 13. I am a student at Oregon State University and be graduating this June with my degree in natural resource management. I have also had the opportunity to come back and now work with the Youth Challenge on the other side of it. The Youth Challenge is required, the cadets are required to commit about 80 hours of service to the community service work. So with that and my internship with Deschutes Soil and Water, I have created a five-year contract with the Youth Challenge program, and they now come out and work with us doing community service work out in Sisters. Watershed restoration is primarily what we're doing on Indian Ford Creek. With their service to the community, it's also required to be something that is educationally beneficial to them. So in accordance with their physical work coming out and doing with us, I come in and do a presentation for them. So they understand the importance of our natural resources and what they're doing and why they're doing it. So specifically the program and what it did for me, similar to Cadet Aguilar, I also had a very serious lack of confidence. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my future. The Youth Challenge program also offers life skills coaching, classes that teach you about resume, how to manage a bank account, things that I don't think are offered in the traditional education system, and greatly benefited me. They also have things like career fairs where different recruiters, different companies, college recruiters come out and speak to these cadets. That was extremely beneficial for me as well. To this day, I'm grateful to be working back with the Youth Challenge program and where it has gotten me today, because I don't honestly know where I would be without it. So with that, I would like to thank you for the opportunity and your support to the Oregon Military Department, the Office of Emergency Management, and the Oregon National Guard.
Questions?
Great.
Congratulations. And I know that you and your husband own your own business, mm-hmm. because we talked about that earlier. And we just want to thank you both for sharing, one, what you both have gained from the program, and two, Ms. Aguilar, we wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you, ma'am.
And I do hope that you succeed and go to the U.S. Air Force. For the record, I served on the U.S. Air Force Academy Board of Visitors. So you're choosing a... I'm a little biased. But, you know, there's no secrets here that I have a fondness for Youth Challenge. And have been extremely supportive of the work that they do. And it's really heartwarming and rewarding to hear from you both and what it has meant in your life. So thank you both again.
Thank you.
Wendell Pelham.
I don't know if I should say this is the hot seat because there's one of us.
But. Sorta.
It's all right. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. My name is Wendell Pelham. I am a Gold Star father.
That's okay. Take
my
your
son,
time.
Thank you. My son, Specialist John Alexander Pelham, was in Class 38 of OICP. I appreciate the opportunity of visiting with you today on behalf of Senate Bill 5532, and specifically the funding of the Oregon Youth Challenge Program. My remarks are going to be centered on a great American success story, that of the Oregon Youth Challenge Program and my son, John Pelham. On the 26th of February, 2017, thank you, sir.
Sure.
My son's lead cadre, Larry DeMar, put a post up on Facebook that I thought was very relevant. Only a few kids in the state are able to claim the title of cadet. Some people think they have to be a bad kid. Some kids are meant to follow a more suitable path. Pain is temporary, pride is forever. Those who have graduated or moved on through the Oregon Youth Challenge Program, I believe and know, as I know many of them and actually was a mentor, that's the truth. that the pain that they go through in the pit, out on the beach, early morning FaceTime, is temporary, because the pride that they enjoy and the satisfaction that they have because of who they become is forever. So John's life is very interesting. He entered the OICP program because it was the best course of action for him at the time. He researched the different opportunities to finish the high school and chose OICP. We knew from that moment on John's life would forever be changed. As the son of a retired U.S. Colonel, Army Colonel, and the brother of a U.S. Army Ranger, I knew what this type of program could and would do for John. My wife and I trusted the OICP program to provide the education, support, and structure John needed, and most importantly, John wanted. To this day, I have to say that it was the best decision our son ever made. Here's some of the ideas, or here's some of the things that occurred and John was able to achieve because of the structure of the program. First cadet platoon leader. First platoon leader for the class of 38 in platoon 1. Squad leader, drill team captain, peer court representative, phone duty, student government president, academic gold cord, meaning the top 10% of his class with a 3.87 GPA. When John entered the program, I'm proud to say that his GPA was zero and forever. I think actually it was a 1.22. So in the 6 months at OICP, he went from no chance in Hades to being able to graduate with his class to actually coming out of the program, leaving the program, and moving on to his final part of his senior year at Sunset High School. So he goes to Sunset High School, ends up playing varsity baseball, graduates with honors, with his class, on time, went on to play college baseball, the College of the Redwoods in California. While there, he made a decision to enlist in the U.S. Army. I was not aware of it. I come home from work. There's his vehicle in the driveway. I'm like most parents. I walk in and go, that's an eight-hour drive. What are you doing home? My gas money, my time. And he tells my wife, he doesn't even look at me at the point, tells my wife, he says, look, I get to live the American dream. I'm playing college baseball, but I'm wasting my time. Subsequently, he enlisted in the U.S. Army. John's military career was very short, 2.5 years. But in that 2.5 years, here's what occurred. Basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Advanced individual training at Goodfellow Air Force Base. He was an intelligence analyst. Fast track to a Special Operations Command right out of AIT. Had a deployment with them. Second deployment was in Afghanistan with the 3rd Special Forces Group, where subsequently on the 12th of February 2014, John was killed in action. John's military awards and commendations in, remember, 2.5 years include the Bronze Star, the Purple Heart, the Meritorious Service Medal, Joint Service Achievement Medal, Army Commendation Medal, Army Good Conduct Medal, National Defense Service Medal, Afghan Campaign Medal with Star, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, the Army Service Ribbon, Overseas Ribbon, North Atlantic Treaty Organization Medal, Combat Action Badge, and Parachutist Badge. John's legacy is prominently displayed throughout our country. At Fort Bragg, he actually has a classroom in the new intelligence school named after him. His name is indelibly imprinted on the Wall of Heroes right outside the USSOC Command, Special Forces Command. His name is on the NSA Wall of Heroes. This is a young man that took the opportunity for the things that he learned and the passions that he gained by going to OICP. On the 25th of February this year, Mr. Frank Stirpeth, one of the I believe he's the director of admissions, wrote me this. We conducted an orientation today. After orientation is over, I usually show the cadets past class videos for inspiration. Today I showed them John's speech given at his graduation. Just wanted you to know he continues to inspire others with his words. Very powerful for these cadets to hear. Rest assured, I let these young folks know how amazing they are every chance I get. I tell them that their cadre's job is to be hard as stone and hard as the stone that sharpens them into the greatness they will become. I am thankful to have been he said, your son's legacy will live for a very long time to come, inspiring others to greatness. I'm thankful to have been but a small part of helping John find his way. Thank you for believing in us. It means a lot. The Live Like John Foundation was founded in honor of the legacy of John Pelham, The foundation provides a scholarship award to one cadet from each graduating class who most exemplifies John's passion for excellence. As a family and a foundation, we recognize the need for growth and development of our youth and will always be a part of the OICP family. We believe our veterans are our country's greatest asset and our youth are our state's greatest asset. We must have greater opportunities for more youth to attend the Oregon Youth Challenge Program and realize how amazing and great they really are. Like many of us, we're trying to find our own way. We just need to help them a little bit and see it and believe it so they can become it. My son is a true testament of what can become of a young person blessed to attend the Oregon Youth Challenge Program. The support you provide to the Oregon Military Department, the Office of Emergency Management, and the Oregon National Guard is greatly appreciated. Thank you for allowing me to come visit with you today and share a great American success story. I'd be honored to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Pelham, I just want to thank you for sharing John with us.
You're very welcome.
There's no greater sacrifice, as you know. And I think I speak for all of us. Your willingness to come and to share his story with this committee. And I don't know if any of my other colleagues want to add anything to that, but I feel so very privileged and honored that you have done so. And I thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair. I have the privilege of the Pelhams being my constituents. And so I had the privilege of learning about John's story a few years ago when we worked with Mr. Pelham and his family to get a highway sign in Specialist Pelham's memory. And some of you may, but you will remember, Senator, we honored him on the floor of the Senate 2 years ago in the 2015 session. And in fact, as a result of that work, because at that time we had to, every time we wanted to put up one of these signs to honor one of our brave Oregonians who have made this ultimate sacrifice, we had to pass separate legislation. And as a result of the work that we were able to do with Mr. Pelham and his family and ODOT, we actually got that law changed. So now families just can work directly with ODOT to get a highway sign in memory of a loved one who has given so much for our state and our country. And I consider myself extraordinarily privileged to serve you and your family as my constituents. And up in my office, I have my John Pelham medal, a little medallion, and I have my What Would John Do bracelet, and yep, there you go. As it happens, in the way of Oregon, my oldest daughter worked with Mr. Pelham for a long time, knew him before I even did, and when I put up a post about it, she said, well, how do you know? So that's how Oregon is, right? And so it's wonderful to see you again. Nice to have you
thank
back
you
with
much.
Us. And thank you again for sharing your story with folks who didn't have the privilege of hearing it a couple of years ago.
It's our honor. Yeah.
Again, thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Linkus and Dan Torres.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, and distinguished committee. My name is Jim Linkus, and I'm the Senior Vice President of a Oregon business by the name of Infomart Data Centers. It's my day job, and I'm also the president of a chapter for an international association for data centers by the name of 7x24 Exchange. Our board of directors is made up of companies like Google, Facebook. We've got Intel on our board, and the folks out in Amazon, a number of other organizations. I'm really here today to testify and just thank you for your support of the House bill for the funding of both the Office of Emergency Management and the Oregon Military Department. I spend a lot of my time on the East Coast and in California and other markets talking to other large corporate businesses looking at Oregon and wanting to relocate. And we've seen a lot of transition come to the state of Oregon, and also brings a lot of tax revenue with it. in addition. But we constantly hear about is around the Cascadia subduction zone. We hear this constantly about, you know, what does your first responder community look like, the law enforcement community, and most importantly, the Office of Emergency Management and Oregon Military Department. And I will tell you that there's not a conversation or a week that goes by when I'm in these meetings across the country, trade shows typically, that this is a topic of conversation. And I've had the honor over the last 5 to 6 years of spending quite a bit of time with the Oregon Military Department and the Office of Emergency Management, connecting Oregon businesses to the system and really trying to build awareness so that people do understand the great work that's being done and the calling that these brave men and women have stepped up to. So we've heard a lot of testimonies today, and I really just wanted to come from the heart and say thank you so much for the work that you're doing, but thank you also for the support of the Air National Guard, the Army National Guard, the Oregon Military Department, and the Office of Emergency Management. It's very, very important for citizens to know when things do go bad, and we hope they never do, but we have people here to pick things up and support us, and I'll continue to tell that story across the country as I do my business endeavors. Thank you for your support.
Chair Winters and Chair Stark, members of the committee, my name is Dan Torres. I'm with Oregon AFSCME. We represent 25,000 workers statewide, including 274 members of the Oregon Military Department Emergency Management Division. Testifying today in support of the budget outlined in SB 5532 and the support of the governor's recommended budget for the Oregon Military Department. Those 274 members are affected by this budget. They work to keep the Oregon National Guard prepared and equipped, provide strong educational and personal development for at-risk youth, and work hard to make sure that all the counties and their residents are prepared in the event of emergency. Without our members, Oregon would be a less safe place. Many of the problems the department has faced have to do with lead in the firing ranges attached to various armories across the state. As the governor's budget points out, this was due to the fact that the maintenance was deferred for years until the armories became a real environmental hazard. The department is working with federal government and our congressional delegates to clean up these armories as soon as possible and get them back into public use. But the closures have had a significant impact on both revenue and our members who work in these areas. We don't want to see this happen again. Please don't let the maintenance problem happen that will cause future issues. Not only is it unsafe for our members who work in these environments, but it also has a large impact on public access and our members' jobs. We don't want the current lead abatement problems to take away from the other great work, though, that is being done and make sure that they have the ability to fulfill those. We strongly support the Youth Oregon Youth Challenge Program, a highly successful program for at-risk youth, which permits them to complete their high school education while learning self-management skills, enabling them to be productive members of the community. We support the expansion so the program can serve more students and families in our communities. To end, we also want to warn against any cuts that might result in weakening Oregon's ability to respond to disaster. We count on the Oregon Military Department and its Emergency Management Division in many of these cases in areas around disaster. And as we address the budget moving forward, we want to make sure that you're keeping that in the forefront. Thank you very much for your time and allowing me to speak today. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Stuckey. Davis, do you have any comments that you would like to make?
No, ma'am.
You sure?
Absolutely.
Okay. I want to announce that there to colleagues, there is additional public testimony that you can find on OLIS. And members, if you go to OLIS, you will find a testimony there. And so I'm going to let you look online to see that you, and so I just thought we had such compelling testimony today that I just wondered if you had any final remarks that you'd like to say to us.
Well, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, I'm Dave Stuckey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. Was there a question, sir, that...
No. It's your time.
No, I do have a question.
You do have a question?
He saw me. He was going like this.
Oh, he did. I can never trust my co-chair, so go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Oh. Co-chair. I like to mess with you.
Well, you know, in the military, we have a different term for that, but that's okay. I'll let you go ahead and answer your question.
Well, ma'am, on day one, he was doing this, and that caused me to jump, and so I've been...
I see.
Yes. The rest of you missed yesterday that I was chairing, and I raised my hand to speak. So...
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair Senator Winters, for allowing me to ask a question.
Yes.
Representative Stark. So I've been thinking about this since your presentation yesterday on recruitments and, you know, only hitting the 75% mark. How often do you have people that apply that you need to get a waiver for, whether it's age or something, whatever? And I'm curious, the waiver process, how often do you grant waivers for people who would initially be denied? You know, is that a big list of people or is it a small list? And specifically on the age waiver.
Yeah, Co-Chair Winters, Representative Starks. From the standpoint of how recruiting goes, we really live off of what DOD says. And so it's the Army that says this is the kind of waiver program that you can do. There's generally windows. It opens up with a what we call in the old days a Cat 4, a Category 4. So it's a less than standard type of enlistment. Those windows are very, very small and very, very short. Generally speaking, recruiting and recruiting standards remain very, very high. And it's kind of an ebb and flow type of arrangement based upon nationally how recruiting goes across this nation. I can't speak to the Air Force and how the Air Force does it from the Air National Guard side, but that's generally how it goes. We typically have a very, very high standard that we have to live up to in order for those enlistments to join our service.
Any additional questions?
No, ma'am.
Nothing from the senators?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Well,
co-chairs, members of the committee, I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you for the opportunity for the last couple of days to share our story, to tell you what happens inside the Oregon Military Department. We know that you're faced with a very, very tough challenge in terms of this budget cut environment. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know how you're going to slice that up from the standpoint of the various public safety entities, but from our standpoint, we want to know that we're going to be here. We're going to be here to support this state. We're going to be here to support, whether it's through the Office of Emergency Management or the Students and Youth Challenge or the Oregon Military Department, 142nd. We're still going to be there. We're still going to go do our job. But from what you're capable of doing, what you've seen, and what you have the task that you have coming forward, we know it's very hard. We will be back in phase two. We know that the changes and the challenges get a little bit harder as this session goes on. But just would like to say thank you on behalf of General Stencil and the rest of the members of the Oregon Military Department. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for your presentation, the overview, which leads us into phase two. And I want to thank the audience and those who testified before it's shared your views and your commitments to the military, the National Guard. And I also, as everybody knows, I'm going to say particular thank you to those in support of Oregon Youth Challenge. I know that we lead the country often. And I thank all of you for that, those of you that are involved, that the challenge is recognized across this country as in the top tier. I also know that when it comes to deployment, I think we probably do more than most. That wasn't a part of your testimony the other day, but I actually know that when we were in the midst of deployment, that how many that we had going and the work that you do both in the communities and to keep us all here safe. And so I personally want to thank you. And with that, colleagues, we are adjourned. We are adjourned.